I'd like to acknowledge Australia's First Nation people as the traditional custodians of the land, and for this episode in particular, the Ngarrigu people. I pay my respects to their elders past and present.
Well, I've always loved growing things. I love watching things grow. The thing about a vineyard is that you can, you know, every single plant out there I've planted myself, and I've watched them go through every year. No year is the same. It doesn't matter what it is. There's always a challenge for you.
This is the Over the Glass podcast. I'm Shantae Whale. Currabira wines lie in the Tumbarumba wine region, located at the foothills of the Snowy Mountains of New South Wales. Tumbarumba's alpine climate is one of Australia's coolest. Although considered a high-risk region for viticulture, it also has some of the greatest rewards. With over 20 years of vintage experience, today we are joined by Kathy Garin, Director of Currabira Wines. Hi, Kathy. Thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, hi, Shantae. How are you going?
I'm really well. Thanks so much for spending some time with me today. How's everything looking over at the cellar door in Tumbarumba?
Oh, it's beautiful. The weather is amazing right now, and it's been really sunny, beautiful days, and the gardens are great. It's really terrific.
Now, Kathy, you grew up with no less than 10 siblings. What is it like growing up in a household of that many people? And did your parents ever call you the wrong name by mistake?
Well, I probably got called lots of things. I don't know whether it was the wrong name, probably quite appropriate at the time. But look, I didn't know any different. We grew up with 10 siblings. Every single neighbourhood friend was always at our place. So it was just chaos all the time, but always lots of fun. So no, I don't know. I think it'd be pretty lonely growing up as an only child or only one sibling.
It's very true. We always think the grass is greener, but pretty amazing to have so much happening in a household. And I suppose you were never lonely.
No, we weren't. It was the boys against the girls all the time. And, you know, the girls usually won.
Perfect. Kathy, you've always had an interest in horticulture, not necessarily in grapes, but can you tell me a little bit about the story of how Currabira Wines came to be?
Yeah, sure. Look, my background is horticulture, and I was, you know, studying down in Burnley in Victoria. We came to Tumbarumba on a holiday for an overnight stop, going up to Newcastle, and the weather was rainy up there, so we turned around and came back to Tumbarumba, my husband and myself. And we just decided we loved it here. We spent 10 days of our holiday, went home to Melbourne, and then quit our jobs and moved up. We rented a little property across the road from where we are now. It was $40 a week on 550 acres, so it was pretty cruisy, you know. Tumba used to shut down for lunch for 2 hours, so everything was pretty laid back. And we went into cut flowers, which was my background, and we did commercial strawberry growing for about 9 years, and then we were approached by the DPI or Agricultural Department back then to go to a seminar with South Corp. And so 8 people went along, 7 men and myself, and that was the beginning of it all, I suppose. We all walked out of there saying we want to grow grapes.
Wow. And being the only female at that time as well, I mean, did you know a lot about grape growing, or you just decided to give it a go? They said that it's an appropriate area and you all said, okay.
Well, I had at least one unit on my degree in viticulture, but I thought it was the most boring subject there was. So it wasn't something I thought would be fantastic, but I just thought I'll give it a go. We'll start off small and see how it is. But absolutely fell in love with it. The challenges were amazing, you know, and we had a hell of a lot of support through the industry as it was an emerging region at the time. All of the huge big wine companies got behind us. Lots of the DPI and the Department of Agriculture back then all gave us a hand. We had experts from every part of Australia come across and show us what to do. So, yeah, we were pretty blessed, actually, the whole region.
Wow. And is that, I mean, sparkling wine is a real feature of Currabira. How did kind of the sparkling component come into fruition?
Well, being the only female out of the 7 blokes, they all signed a contract with South Corp, and I ended up taking the contract with Hardy Wine Company back there. One, because I liked the winemaker better. I thought he was much better looking. And so that's how I made my choice. But and that was a sparkling wine contract for 22 years. So that's how we started and what we did. But never look back. You know, Hardy Wine Company were amazing, and so were South Corp back then to the growers. So it was great.
And, I mean, sparkling wine is really a winemaker's wine. And everything you do is traditional method. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yes, the old traditional method. Yeah.
And you have some reserve releases that you have as well in your portfolio.
Yes, we do. And the first one that we did was by default, let me tell you that, because we had hit by frost. We couldn't release the vintage from 4 years previous or 3 years previous because we had no money after losing the crop. So it just sat there. And then when we finally decided to disgorge it, I thought, oh, gosh, what's going to happen now? And we disgorged, and that's when we started winning all these huge awards. And it was a bit of a mistake. But anyway, you always learn from them. So it was what made us then start doing 3 years, 5 years, and an 8 year disgorgement on our wines because they just get better with age.
Wow. Happy coincidence. That's very lucky, but I'm sure many of the greatest, you know, wines in the world probably happen in a similar way. Tumbarumba region lies halfway between Melbourne and Sydney. What do you think makes the region unique and what styles of wine are best suited there other than sparkling?
Well, the uniqueness, I think, comes from individual sites as well, where, you know, high altitudes, where very mountainous. We've got very different soils, granites, basalts and shales around the region. We've got abundant water, so, you know, that's never an issue. And I think we've got very cool nights and warm days during the summertime. So in the summer, even though it can be quite a warm day, we get quite low temperatures at night. So the vines get to rest, which is what, just like you and I, we like to sleep on a cooler night. And that's what they like to do. So when they shut down of a nighttime, they recover and ready for the next day. And that's what actually gives them really good, clean, crisp flavours. The air's pure. The grounds are mostly granitic and high water. So, no, that's a very good growing, you know, I suppose it's conditions for the vines. And also every vineyard's very different. We're all in different pockets of all around the region. We might be similar in altitude, but we'll have different aspects. We'll have, different, sometimes the storms come through on one vineyard and miss the others. And, you know, so it's quite a challenging region. Also frost is the biggest probably challenge, but when you get there, the rewards are very high.
Yeah, absolutely. In the past, you've spoken to me about Tumbarumba being known, like you said, for grape growing rather than winemaking itself. And in the time that you've been there, you've seen a shift in that perspective. What do you think the future holds for the region now?
Oh, look, I think, Chardonnay is probably the biggest grape variety in the region. It's also known across, especially New South Wales, as being a very high quality region for Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. I think that's only going to continue. A few vineyards are going into a few boutique wines for their own brands, which is fantastic. But whites do very well here because even though we have good sunshine, we very rarely get sunburned because of the altitude and the aspects and the way we grow canopies. So we're pretty blessed like that. But the future, I think, especially as, you know, the climate change is getting a little bit warmer, we're able to probably grow a few other varieties that we couldn't have done maybe 30 years ago. So things like Tempranillo and Gamay that are becoming quite popular in the region. So those varieties possibly wouldn't have been grown back then, or we didn't know about them. I'm not too quite sure what the answer is there. But, yeah, certainly gives us a chance to grow a few experimental ones.
Yeah. I mean, Gamay and Tempranillo sounds like just so exciting. 2021 was a pretty tragic year with the bushfires, and I know that you lost one third of your vineyards. I know it's hard to talk about, but what was it like to go through such a kind of devastating experience like that? And how have you kind of moved forward and look to the future now?
Well, it's 2020. So we lost 2021 as well, but 2020 was the fires. And, you know, that was with full ride off. And, you know, that was across many places across New South Wales. So we weren't on our own. Recovering from the fires, we were fortunate enough that the vines have recovered. But 2021, there wasn't much fruit because all the buds were still with cane prune. So they need to have fruit off the second year wood. And when they didn't have that, when that was burnt off, so 2021 was quite light as well. But now this year is looking amazing. We've got plenty of flowers sitting out there at the moment, so we're looking for a very exciting 2022 vintage. But, you know, support from people has really made us get through. Our customers, everybody around have been amazing. So it does give you you know, a bit of faith and a bit of hope that there's a silver lining on the other side. And our sales have been fantastic. The support has been amazing.
Wow, that's really great to hear. You really seem like someone that always sees the glass half full. Why do you love what you do? I mean, when it can get so hard and you can occasionally risk it all with something like Mother Nature's mercy, why do you love what you do and why do you continue to do it?
Well, I've always loved growing things. I love watching things grow. The thing about a vineyard is that you can, you know, every single plant out there I've planted myself, and I've watched them go through every year, and no year is the same. It doesn't matter what it is, there's always a challenge for you. So that's just me in general. I'm used to probably making decisions quickly, and I think you have to be adaptable, and also you have to give in to nature. There's just things I know initially when we started growing, it used to just break my heart if something went wrong, and I couldn't even walk outside some days when we'd lost a crop. But now I just know that there's something else that's going to, you know, make us change, and that was going into wine and then going into the restaurant to sort of supplement the income, and all of them have been very successful. So I just believe you've got to love what you do, and that's what I do love. I love being out there in the vines, and, you know, I used to name the rose, and I'm a bit strange. I'm very strange, but I love to be busy. I just love the challenge, I think. And it's always good to be comparing year to year. And then when you see them out in the bottle and you can see one vintage, you can remember the vintage and see what it tastes like. You really can taste the difference vintage to vintage, I think, especially from climates like ours.
Yeah. And talking about that, is it 29 years of vintage experience you've had? Is that right?
Yes, 29 vintages. You make me sound old.
No, wise. Wise is what I was going for.
Okay.
Is there a particular vintage that really stands out in your mind, whether it be for better or for worse, or a particular year that stands out in your mind as being one that's really memorable?
Yeah, I do have a few. So there's, you know, some bad years. I know that, you know, 1998, which is why we went into winemaking, and 2004 is why we didn't disgorge our 2001. So, you know, there was a couple of key moments that made us learn from that, and all we did was realise we'd made the right decisions, even though it was only because of financials. Great years were 2001 and 2019. I think both of those are absolutely outstanding years. Really looking, we haven't even released our 2019 yet, but I'm really looking forward to that. But, you know, every year is different for different reasons, but those ones are the most ones that stand out in my mind. And hopefully 2022. I hope I can remember this one very fondly.
You're definitely due for an exceptional year, that's for sure. Kathy, your vision was to create a gathering place for family and friends. Do you believe you've been successful in that? And what do you kind of hope that you leave behind in your time for the future generations?
Well, Coorabirra means family gathering meeting place in Aboriginal. That's what the district is, our little township. And I believe that is exactly what we've done. I mean, we see it every single day we're open, is families coming together, people meeting up, and I'm really, really proud that people love to come here and experience that. I love it. I think to leave in the future, I think, is to someone to remember that there was a little grey-haired old lady that loved doing what she was doing because, you know, we named the place after our neighbour because she said no one would remember her. She was born and bred here, and, you know, that's something that's very special to me. And I'm hoping that one day someone will remember me for the same things. Yeah.
Absolutely. Gosh, we've never even met, but I just want to give you like a virtual hug over the phone. We have so many wonderful regions, especially in New South Wales, but all throughout Australia. What do you think, if someone's travelling out to Tumbarumba, what can they look forward to as a visitor there?
Well, if you like nature-based activities, we have got so much. I mean, we used to have the beautiful Sugar Pine Walk that was nearly 100-year-old, and that got burnt in the fires, which was absolutely tragic. But we've got plenty of other things to see and do. The families that you meet are always so welcoming. All the businesses always say hello. You know, that's when you know a stranger's around, when they don't say hello. So if you're walking down the street, anybody, if they're a local, will say g'day, wave their finger, nod their head as you're walking past, whether they know you or not. And you go into any business and they're always very welcoming. And I think that, you know, that's what a lot of people say when they come. They just feel like it's clean, it's fresh, and everybody's so nice. And we've got some absolutely beautiful businesses around now, so it's great.
To be a family-run business and for doing what you have for so long, what is the kind of what's the heart and soul of Kurabira in terms of running a business? What's important to you, and how do you keep your team together, particularly through harder years?
Well, I believe all my staff are my family. Every one of them, their families, I always tell them, family comes first. If I can't come to work because of the family or something, that's the most important thing. We will always manage, even though this weekend we didn't. We're too busy. But we always say their families come first, and they are always accepted as part of our family. We try to treat them that way. I think everyone works really hard and are very dedicated to doing a really good job. So the business, I think, has grown. You know, we've got 17 staff now, and every single one of them, does an amazing job, puts in, and they all seem to love it most days. Yeah, I think it's just like leading by example too, because I will do whatever job needs to be done. You know, I wash dishes most of the time, or cook, or do wine. It doesn't really matter. I don't care what I do. I just love hearing people laughing. That's what you can hear a lot. And I love seeing people having a great time. So, and going home not hungry and taking wine out the door always puts a smile on my face.
I bet, the simple things. It sounds like you've created a really sacred place at Kurabira in Tumbarumba, and I can't wait till I can head down and stop by the cellar door, which I've heard so much about. But when you're in your happy place and you've got your loved ones gathered around, what are you drinking? If you have to have, you're having a glass of something, what are those three drinks that you would love to drink for the rest of your life?
Well, I have to say bubbles, because, you know, that's always been what I think life is about, celebrating. So I love to have champagne or Australian sparkling mainly. But my first choice would be Arras from Tasmania, because I absolutely adore Ed Carr. I think he's the best sparkling winemaker there is in the world. He does an amazing wine. So that is one of them. And then I'd say the Cuvée Consult. So that is by Peter Baverstock in South Australia. She's an amazing sparkling winemaker as well, and she does some beautiful rosé sparklings, and I love hers. And then I'd have to say 805 Ours, because I've got so much that I can just drink at any time I like. So somebody's got to drink it, and if it has to be me, it's me. I always said if we went into farming and all the things went wrong, imagine having to eat all your cattle. But at least if you're in winemaking, what you do is you can sit back and drink all your wine. So we're better off.
That is an incredible comparison. And it says exactly what you want it to say.
I know. What would you rather?
Now that you've put that out into the world, you may have a little bit less 805 rosé to drink, because I certainly know I try to get as much as I can into key that I can possibly have. So, gosh, it's been so lovely catching up with you, Kathy. I think that, you know, Tumbarumba should be a place name that all wine lovers hold in really high regard. It's got a very, very bright future. And I've absolutely loved talking to you today. So thank you so much for spending your time with me. It's been inspiring, and I hope to chat with you again soon.
Thank you, Shantae. You're welcome, and lovely to speak to you as well.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Stay tuned for more stories from the world of wine and drinks. Listen in every Thursday on your podcast app. Follow us on Instagram at overaglasspod and contact us at overaglass@deepintheweeds.com.au.